Okay, let's start with just jumping into what you are personally doing, like as part of your profession, for regulating blockchain. So what are the current projects you are working on, maybe your ideas, like what we need to focus during this discussion. So maybe we could start with Marlos.
Thanks. Well, I'm the program manager of a lot of blockchain projects within the Dutch government, and I'm also responsible for the international strategy and collaboration of the Dutch Blockchain Coalition, and that's an initiative by the Ministry of Economic Affairs, and it's a public-private collaboration. So all the ministries are member of this coalition, the corporate startups and all the universities, and there we are working together on regulation, security, the human capital agenda, but we're also implementing 5 use cases at the national level. So, and I'm also the contact person for the European Blockchain Partnership, so we also try to work together with the other European countries in implementing projects.
I like how you put it, we're trying.
We're trying, yes. That's
we're going pretty slow. Yoni, what about you?
I'm the CEO and founder of eToro, which is the largest social trading network. We have 10 million registered users from more than 100 countries who can trade stocks, traditional currencies, commodities, indices, and cryptocurrencies. We're one of the first regulated financial institutions to enable people to trade cryptocurrencies. We started back in 2014, and we're obviously regulated both in Europe, UK, Australia, now setting up also in the US. So we're very familiar with regulations, and as a regulated firm, we had to sort of find the path to be able to release blockchain products and cryptocurrencies to our users in a regulated manner.
Sure, in a way, on the other side of the process, so you can kind of see the impact directly on your business.
So unlike the majority still of crypto firms out there, so most companies who deal in cryptocurrencies are actually not regulated. So we were kind of in a unique position where we're actually regulated as a securities broker to sell securities, and then sort of under that, basically under our regulations, being able to provide also cryptocurrency trading.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Leticia.
Yeah, so I'm an independent expert at the European Commission. So from the public side, I work with DG Connect and EASME, which is the European Agency for Small Medium Enterprises. Mm-hmm. And on that public side, I work with proof of concepts. So basically trying to get as many small medium enterprises to adopt technologies. So either it's blockchain or AI, machine learning, but basically building the infrastructure so that we have a wider scale adoption. And then on the private side, I work with banks to implement blockchain and other technology implementations as well. So I get to see both the private and the public side of things, but I'm not completely a public servant. So commercial minded, I'd say.
Okay, so we have quite a good combination of opinions because we all come from different sides of the technology. But just to make sure that we're all on the same ground, let's think about the definition. So what do you actually, as part of your job, what do you actually, how do you define blockchain? So what is it for you?
So I'm going to be a bit controversial here. I don't actually think it's a technology in the sense that I think it is a composition of various technologies. I don't think it's a technology that exists entirely on its own. You still need internet infrastructure. You still need cloud infrastructure, data, etc. So I think the term DLT is a little bit, too much of a stretch. And then in terms of the projects that I've worked on, blockchain is something that doesn't work on its own. So it's like an additionality to existing technologies. So I would define it as a component of various technologies.
Mm-hmm. Yuri.
I actually like the definition of DLT. Distributed ledger technology, I think, defines very nice sort of what is blockchain technology. It's eventually a sort of decentralized, shared database that defines in a very specific ways sort of the keys in that database. So in the case of Bitcoin, it's the number of Bitcoins. In the case of Ethereum, it's the smart contract code as well as the Ether and the gas. So I think it's basically a clear definition of a decentralized shared database to store very specific types of information that enables eventually the participants of the blockchain, so users in the case of Bitcoin or Ethereum, to actually hold assets and move assets between each other.
Okay, then what else?
Well, I can't give you a definition. It depends on the project, and I'm not sure with which definition we will end up, but I really like the idea of the it's an addition. And I was immediately thinking about Starbucks. They live by additions, not selling normal coffee, but all the additions. So additions can be quite important. But in the Netherlands, we don't have a lot of discussion about the definition, but a lot about what is the right use case. And I don't think there are right use cases for blockchain technologies. We have a lot of problems, and we need a lot of solutions with a combination of technologies, and not only blockchain. But we must discuss our experience in solving these solutions and what can blockchain contribute to this, instead of having this simple discussion about what is the right use case. There is no right use case, I think. And if we are, we keep on searching for the right use case, we will end up with nothing at all. So let's discover how can blockchain contribute to societal issues, and what can it do and what can it do, instead of the discussion about
what it is. Okay, we seem not to quite agree on one particular definition. So let's look then at the different aspects of blockchain, because blockchain is not only like about some technical solutions, but also there is an economic element, like the tokens, there is investment element, there are other features that are decentralization and anonymity that can cause some problems in terms of regulation and kind of regulating Bitcoin and blockchain in general. So let's start with different aspects. Which aspects of blockchain do you think actually need to be regulated?
Sure. I think the most sort of the most disruptive part of blockchain obviously is Bitcoin, right? That's the sort of first blockchain. And I think it sort of challenges a very interesting question of what is money? And it generated basically for the first time a digital native financial instrument, which can actually move throughout the internet freely. And that's very, very unique, because it's the first time people can actually hold a financial instrument on their own, right? So we're very much used to the fact that we only hold financial instruments with financial institutions, with financial intermediaries. Suddenly this technology enabled people to hold it on their own. That's the most basic disruptive thing about both blockchain and Bitcoin. I think what it suddenly inspired an amazing group of, I think, one of the smartest communities on Earth now, to basically discuss about the convergence of technology, finance, economics, sort of trying to reinvent money, reinvent financial instruments, reinvent finance. People are talking about the qualities of sound money. So people are talking about smart contracts as a way to basically create social contracts, which is coming from philosophy of what is government, governance, etc. So I think what it created a lot of very, very unique and interesting discussion about how can we use technology to basically challenge the status quo.
But what needs to kind of be regulated among all the amazing opportunities can give? Like, there are also some threats, right?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges. Bitcoin, by definition, can't be regulated. So you can't regulate Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is decentralized. You can't tell anybody change this and that in Bitcoin, right? So it's very, by the way, hard for regulators to understand that you can't tell somebody, I need you to add AML into this Bitcoin protocol, because you can't, because it's decentralized. Mm. What you can regulate the intermediaries or the companies that deal with cryptocurrencies or that deal with blockchain. The biggest challenge is, by definition, what is super interesting around Bitcoin, and I think without that it would be much less interesting, is it's a global phenomenon, right? So it inspires people, and people are using Bitcoin in, I think, every country now in the world. And it's, there is no, you can't regulate something globally, because there isn't one global government who can invent rules globally. The other part is, regulation by definition is rules. Even the purpose of sort of the definition of the term regulation, to regulate something, by definition sort of a bit slows it down, especially when, if you think about regulation in suddenly 100 different countries and they're all different, it's very hard to find the right path. For us, we found that we could use the existing regulations, so we enable people to trade stocks, and in the same way we enable people to trade cryptocurrencies. So we're a regulated entity that offers cryptocurrencies, so that's easily understandable. So regulated entities can use the blockchain, but it's very hard to sort of regulate specifically decentralized currencies like Bitcoin.
So it basically goes from the ecosystem the company operates.
Yeah.
So it uses the regulation in that area.
Exactly.
Okay. So how about Leticia?
For me, it's more a case of standards. And I think whether it's standards around security tokens or cryptocurrencies or even the technologies itself, I think we're not at that point yet where we have established standards. So for example, if we look at the key players who are trying to establish standards like the IEEE or iOS 307, various, you know, self-formed organizations, they're all trying to set standards, and we're not quite there yet, I think, in terms of, you know, maybe a few years, 2 to 5 years, perhaps longer. I think then we will start to see more innovations in the market, because then people have a standard that they can deploy. So I think until we get to that level where we have standards in both the cryptocurrency assets themselves and also in the technologies, we still have quite a way to go. But also I think another thing to bring into that is actually the role of academics and universities, academic institutions, in helping us to set standards, not only around cryptocurrencies, but also the technology itself. So I think it's less a conversation about regulation, but more a conversation about standards.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah, we're also trying to work with academics and researchers to bring them into the spotlight, because they have this profound knowledge, profound understanding, and maybe the sense of the direction of the technology, like what actually can produce tangible use cases for the technology. Maloš.
Well, I'm not a big fan of regulation. Also not from non-regulation, but I think it's fascinating that in every blockchain conference, there's a panel about regulation. I travel a lot and I'm always asked, can you please be a part of a panel about regulation? I actually
hate
the topic.
Yeah,
because it will not change a lot. In the Netherlands, the Dutch Central Bank recently this week, they announced they will regulate organizations like yours, and it's fine, but it will not change the world. If they wouldn't have done it, nothing would have happened. And I do understand where it comes from, because this whole blockchain space, it started with the crypto, and there we had this regulation issue. But to have real blockchain implementations, the regulation is not a big part. It's a little bit about standardization, but it's mainly about collaboration. For example, in the Netherlands, we have several use cases for the registration of diplomas on the blockchain. Every country has them. I've seen at least 200 prototypes, and they're working. It's fine. The technology, it's not so difficult. There is already some work has been done about the standardization, but why don't we have a real-life application at the European level? Because it's about collaboration.
Yeah.
So every country in Europe has built their own prototype. In Netherlands, I think we have 5 or 6. So we're sitting around the table within this European blockchain partnership, and everybody has something. We must agree on which application are we going to use, what are the functionalities, how to standardize them, maybe how to regulate these applications, what are the legal aspects, but most of all, it's are we willing to collaborate on this? Mm. Or does Italy want to push their application? Or does the Netherlands want to have their own application? So that's, at this moment, I think the biggest problem, and not the regulation. We can build a lot of new regulation rules or standards or whatever. It won't help us. We must implement some examples.
Yeah, you mentioned diplomas. I actually have a reply to that comment. And I'm going to throw this word GDPR at you.
Yes.
Because what kind of blockchain was used to implement the diplomas on blockchain? Was it private or public?
Because we have all different kind of variations. So like I said, I've seen at least 200 examples worldwide. Singapore has them, Dubai, within Europe. Everybody has. The first thing every country does is building a prototype for diplomas.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, it's fine, but the problem is, can we find a way to work together and to agree on a certain? It's not helpful if we have 200 applications for the same issue. It doesn't work. So we must agree on a certain application. But regarding the GDPR, it's also the same discussion with regulation. So the law is a problem. It's in my project. It's hardly a problem. But we have to figure out in which project what is the best solution. For example, regarding GDPR, sometimes maybe the best solution is only to place the hash pointers on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we must use the zero knowledge proof in combination with the blockchain. And sometimes we will actually place some data on the blockchain. But what is the best solution in which example? And are there more solutions? I don't know. But we must figure this out. We must share this with each other. And also the legal experts, they don't agree. So we have a lot of legal advices on every application. They never agree all the same. But we must learn more. And then you need a combination of the legal experts, the universities, the governments, the corporates, all working together. And that's the most difficult part.
Yeah, so what's your tip, for example, how to make people collaborate and come up with some working
so
ideas?
Yes, so next panels, they must show examples what is the best way to move forward and what are good examples of these collaborations instead of the best examples of regulation. It doesn't change anything at all.
Okay.
I think one very important thing to understand is that we're starting to shift financial services from sort of everything defined more in sort of legal language to computer sciences language. Now, that could significantly benefit regulators if we learn how to use it properly, because it means much higher level of certainty, much higher level of transparency. So I'm actually assuming that somewhere in the next 10 years, we'll see at least some regulators that actually mandate the usage of blockchains in standard blockchains in financial institutions, because they'll suddenly realize they have the ability to see all the data in real time. Right now, regulators have the ability to see data in a delay of 3 months from financial audits, and it's not granular data. Suddenly they'll be able to see all of the data in real time, and if all of the financial institutions will be connected to the same blockchains, you'll actually get a real picture of what's happening in the markets and potentially could avoid things like the global financial crisis in 2008. The other part is central banks. I'll be very, very surprised if 20 years from now, we haven't moved most fiat currencies into central bank-issued digital currencies. And again, it's about transparency. So now, today, and there's a lot of questions around privacy, obviously, but today, basically, the central bank doesn't know where all of the money is. It needs to analyze the balance sheets of the banks, and everything is in delays. In theory, if the government itself, the central bank, would issue the currencies directly to wallets of the citizens, we'll have a much higher level of transparency. And if you think of things like quantitative easing, which today basically you're pushing money through the banks, think about quantitative easing just giving money directly to people. So a lot of tools can be used by government to eventually use blockchains.
I guess they already opened that door slightly, at least with PSD2 regulations and open banking in the UK. So probably they're going to kind of think things over in that direction. I actually have one.
Can I chip in there? I think we have to find an incentive for people to want to participate. So, you know, with your example with the regulator, if you participate in a blockchain, what are you getting out of it? Is it that transparency? Is it actually knowing what's happening in the market? So I worked on an implementation last year that started last year for a Japanese bank, and they are part of a consortium which is looking at a KYC ledger. And from the regulator's point of view, it's really interesting because they can monitor people like, you know, politically exposed persons or people who are on the sanctions list. So that is part of the incentive that they're getting for it. From a bank's point of view, it's again knowing who your customers are, you know, that AML pressure from the regulator. So I think if you make the incentives more tangible, then people are more willing to collaborate because they know what they're getting out of it. And I think at the moment with this discussion around blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, it's very technical, but people want to know, you know, what will I get out of it practically, and therefore why should I participate?
Yeah, I think it's very close what you expressed also, like learning to regulate the blockchain space through use cases, through actual application. Actually, I have one last question, like even though our panel is called like the threats of the over-regulation, I have a another view on that is like some countries and some states in the United States, for example, they act as advocates of the technology. They want to attract cryptocurrency businesses, they want to attract blockchain businesses because it's a huge, bunch of money, let's just say a bunch of talents that will have like a lot of potential to scale. So what do you think? Is there a danger in that, like being too nice towards blockchain and cryptocurrency as a regulator? Or is it going to be vice versa, like have a huge impact on the innovative new wave in blockchain space? So what's your view, like over-regulation or too kind regulators?
I think actually it's a great opportunity for some governments, states, etc. We see it with several states in the US. We see it in Europe with Gibraltar, where we actually established a company and got license. We see it in Malta in Europe. So I think some countries, states are actually approaching this with a very smart perspective, that this can generate inflow of companies into the country, an inflow of talent, and obviously eventually taxes. And I think generally it's a very good thing to see regulators in countries who are interested in sort of leading the way to create the right regulatory framework for companies to be able to operate in.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I certainly agree, and I think a lot of the smaller jurisdictions that you've mentioned, they want to have that competitive advantage, but I think you also have to be careful not to rush through regulations just to attract people, because you still want to have a certain level of quality in terms of the businesses that set up. But I think we need actually more from the bigger jurisdictions, you know, the ones that, you know, have the concentration of capital markets like the UK, like Singapore, like the US. It's a good effort for the smaller countries to try, But I think people will only take it really very seriously when larger jurisdictions start to, you know, put their toes in the game. And there is some work around that. So, for example, in the UK, the Crypto Assets Committee recently published their publications and their reports around, you know, what they think they want to move forward with in terms of regulation. The MAS as well. The FCA also announced the Global Financial Innovation Network as well. So I think the larger jurisdictions are starting to make a push forward. But I think as long as only the smaller jurisdictions are making that move, I don't think it will create enough of a wave in the market.
Okay. Thank you, Milos.
I think it's very important to attract the blockchain talent. So if regulation helps, fine. But also in this case, I think it's in the Netherlands, for us, we're not so... Regulation, it's not a very important topic. We're more focused on building the right ecosystem where it's easy for a blockchain startup or a blockchain company to work together closely with the banks or in the government and the universities, and where you're actually helping each other in implementing real life use cases. So I don't care about the regulation elements in attracting talent. Of course, we will end up with some regulations, probably, I hope, at the European level, and it's not different in every country, but I think it's to attract real the best talent of the world, you must give them real projects, and then you must work closely together, and I think that's far more important than the regulation.
That's a very nice conclusion. Thank you so much for the discussion.